What's up, guys? Chris Mead back for another episode of My Biggest Lessons. I just had the most incredible conversation with Austin Maxwell from Kanga Coolers. This episode's a little bit longer than normal, but stick around to the end. We honestly just rip into building a TikTok budget, how we're thinking about organic, and honestly, how we're spending our content dollars when attribution is harder than ever. Hope you enjoy it.
What an intro. Appreciate it, Chris. Excited to be here, brother.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for coming on, man. So we probably linked up 2 years ago or so. I was sitting on my couch one night. I saw some dude do a backflip on Shark Tank. And I'm like, yo, these dudes are pretty cool. So C or C plus on a project? What was it?
It was a C. It ended up getting moved to a B after it was all said and done. But we didn't really follow the rubric. I think we were doing too much product testing, which is our other word, drinking beer that we like to say. But yeah, it was technically a C.
That's amazing. Have you heard back from the teacher since?
We do a lot of fun things with him now. There's plenty of good, fun banter back and forth. There's no hard feelings, no animosity at all. So it's all good there.
That's good, dude. My first boss out of college, right? So I was working this shitty selling commercial slots. And I'll always remember I got an email from him saying, Chris, the back left of your shirt is partially untucked. Can you please tuck it in?
That's absurd.
And Grace is like, you dude, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And we're not even client facing, right? You're just sitting in your little cube for 9 hours being miserable. So he wrote to me the other day being like, oh, congrats. I'm like, nah, dude, no, thank you.
It's like a nice question, but hey, man, we're good. Appreciate it type of deal.
Exactly. Yeah, dude. So a lot of product testing, obviously it works, right? I have a Kanga myself. We've done a collab with CrossNet, which was dope. Where do you see it going, right? So like you have the koozies for obviously the massive cans now. Like what's the next steps and where do you see the evolution of Kanga taking it?
Yeah, it's been a lot of conversations around the office and the co-founders of late, but I think we finally decided that we're trying to be the world's greatest beer cooler. We want to segment and firmly cement ourselves inside the beer drinking space. So when someone is going to enjoy their cold 12 pack or six pack, and they think I need a cooler for this beer, or we also include seltzer or any canned alcoholic beverage in that category, because we can't neglect the White Claws or the High Noons of the world, but we want to be the world's best beer cooler. And so we're going to build products and our mission and everything that Kanga is doing behind that idea of being the best in that space. So we see this going a lot further. We do a lot of custom business. So we're already working with Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, all the largest microbreweries and breweries in the country right now, and even some international. But we feel like we can even take that further with more innovative products, maybe not just soft-sided coolers. We already are in the vacuum sealed space with a can insulator. We try to do some unique things by putting finger strap on the outside of it. We have ice packs, the shape of beer cans and seltzer cans. So just trying to be as unique and innovative in that space as possible.
How's the relationship? So I know you like head up the sales team, right? It's like, how does the deal look like on a, let's just call it a Budweiser comes in. Take me from the first inbound lead all the way to close. And like, you don't have to give me exact numbers, but like even deal size look like.
Totally. That it's what's cool about the custom side of our business is we use neoprene to print on our materials, and that's opened up a world of opportunity because a lot of people we compete with in this B2B custom space, they've got a stock red, black, blue cooler or drinkware, and they just throw small Anheuser-Busch or Bud Light or Natural Light logo on it. With us, we're able to fully customize your brand colors, anything that you want on the outside of our product. So it's actually was the backbone of our business. So when we first started Class Project, didn't really understand e-commerce, didn't really know how to like get this to the masses. So when we went onto Shark Tank, we wanted to at least have a certain amount of sales. And like 100K was that number that we were like, if we go on there with anything less than that, they're going to rip us to shreds. So for 6 months, we pretty much just grinded in the B2B space and tried to identify whether it was law firms or breweries or unique brands like Southern Tide or Friday Beers to do collabs with. And they'll basically order wholesale from us. So an Anheuser-Busch opportunity would look like, hey guys, we want to sell a Natural Light, Busch Light, and Bud Light custom cooler on our website. Here's a PO for 500 pieces of each style, 500 of each 12 pack, 500 of each 24 pack. Then what we'll do is go back and forth on the artwork, make sure that they're happy with it, do a spec sample for them, make sure that that process gets approved, then go into production, then we'll hand it over to them at wholesale price. So if we're retailing something for $50, they're getting it for $25. Then they will then sell it for $50, make their 100% or 50% margin. So that's pretty much the process there. And then sometimes we'll do partnerships, like what we've done with Friday Beers is we will add an extra 100 units to their 500 unit order. We will sell those 100 on our website and call it part of our Kanga exclusives program. And we'll give them a royalty on each unit sold. But that way it's like a true partnership where we're both promoting the product simultaneously on social media. So been a fun way to get eyeballs on our brand through other larger accounts.
No, I love that. And it's also kind of like a trust stamp to say, like, we did this stuff with USA Volleyball and ESPN, and I'm sure it was the same thing from the College Class Project. What moves can you make strategically to make people believe in Kanga and actually feel like it's a real company and not just some dude selling insulated canned stuff, right? So
it's
stuff
difficult.
Like that.
Yeah, you walk a fine line, especially when you have campaigns like breakfast beers and we're doing TikToks where people are thinking that we actually just show up to the office and crack a cold one at 9 a.m. where that's obviously not the case. And it's obviously a skit, but to everyone, it's not. We have some people in the collegiate licensing space that sent an email out to everyone of the other SEC schools a couple weeks ago and was like, hey, just want to let you know, I met these awesome guys from Kanga. They're super like down to earth and they're not what they seem on social media. They're not just beer drinkers in the morning. And we were like, I mean, obviously, but I guess to some people it comes across that way. So you walk a fine line.
It's tough for sure. How do you think about like where are you staffing the team where you have like a team of salespeople just outbounding all day long, or is it more just trying to build up enough demand on TikTok to bring in user generated? Like
it's both. It's definitely paid ads through social. What we've found a very successful and ROI positive every time we've attended is trade shows. So we generate a lot of leads from going out, being in person. Our sales forces, our team is about 12 strong right now, 4 or 5, which are primarily on the sales team and primarily on the B2B side of it. And so we have 2 guys who are just on the road constantly. They're actually flying back from Vegas right now. They've done 3 shows in the last 3 weeks. And so that's just a great way to be in person because there's an education gap with an iceless cooler. Like those words in the same sentence don't make a lot of sense to people. So it's really important for us to be in person, showcasing how the product works, explaining how it can be valuable to that company, whether it's full custom, whether it's wholesale, or whether it's a direct to consumer show, even just selling ones and twos at a music festival or at a concert. So
we met up with the team actually at Outdoor Retailer in Denver. It's just
that's like, what they said. Yeah.
We had a good night. Yeah, we were out drinking a little bit. We had a fun time. But even that event, dude, like a lot of people don't, they're just so focused on direct consumer only where, I don't know, Outdoor Retailer probably costs us all like 15, 20 grand. But I mean, we might close like a Costco account from that. So it's just the ROI right there is so, it's obvious.
Some of them you get impatient for because I love leaving a trade show with $50,000 or $100,000 in written POs from wholesalers being like, covered my costs day one. But then there's shows like that where it's, I don't know if we even wrote one order. We may have written one, but that's it. Definitely didn't cover costs. But then we're talking at Dick's Sporting Goods. We're talking at Bucky's. We're talking at these larger accounts where it can and hopefully will pay off. But you got to have a little bit of patience there because those upfront expenses, 3 years ago, we would have never gone to trade shows unless we knew we were going to get an ROI immediately.
So. Absolutely, dude. Yeah. And honestly, so our first trade show ever was in Atlantic City at a gym teacher conference. And dude, I swear to God, we made probably like $25,000 a day, and it was a 3-day event. And we were just like, it was the 3 founders back then. We were just clearing. It was swipe, swipe, swipe.
Yep.
And so that set the mindset for all future trade shows. We're like, if we don't do that, like this trade show is a waste of money. But over time, you find.
You got to think investments. Some shows are investments, and then others are like that, where you're so stoked leaving the show. You have the best energy because you're like, dude, boys, we crushed it. Let's go. So
I know y'all obviously have a lot of retail accounts now, or Ace Hardware being the biggest one, right?
Correct. Yep.
They show you a lot of love. How do you think about, so the biggest mind for me over the last 20, let's call it 18 months has been like, how do I attribute direct to consumer marketing and social paid ad marketing to my retail sales? Right. And like, where do you put love? Where do you understand like cash in versus cash out? How do you think about it? And like, how are you spending money on a daily basis?
Yeah, we're thinking about the larger accounts like Ace and Palmetto Moon and Shields and these stores that really have a lot of buying power, and we want to be able to scratch their itch as much as possible and show them that we're a true partner. So what we've done organically with Ace as much as possible is included them in TikToks. So we'll go to an Ace hardware store, do a fake pitch or present the product to a customer as they're walking out of the store, making sure that Ace is in the background, letting people know. So that's a give on our end. We did have an opportunity to be on like Fox and Friends this past weekend. We made it a point for them to say, hey, available at KangaCoolers.com, but also at your local Ace hardware. Doing the same thing with Palmetto Moon, trying to drive depth in retailers. From a spending perspective, I mean, we're always targeting that 3-to-1 ROI on an e-commerce basis alone, knowing that anything above that, that comes from retail, we're not truly quantifying in that number, but we know that it's coming from that because we also have an inbound lead gen form on our website. And that's where we do see a lot of like embroidery and full custom inquiries come through there. And we know that they're not just being pulled out of thin air. Yes, there's a word of mouth marketing component to it. And maybe business A had a great experience with their cooler, so they told business B, but we can confidently say that at least half, if not 75% of those inbound leads are because someone saw one of our ads. And when we're able to add that revenue number to the top line and we look at our total ad spend, we're actually a lot more than 3-to-1, but we still try to be responsible and hold that 3-to-1 just on e-commerce alone. That way we know that, hey, if there are no B2B opportunities happening, or if we do shit the bed at 4 trade shows in a row, at least we're still profitable in this channel. So
I love that. That was a tough lesson for me, dude. We were running before at a 1 ROAS because of our retail distribution. And we had Amazon too. So it was like, for every 1 sale here, we'll get 7 offline. Yeah. The money will add up eventually.
Did you include your Amazon in the one
no,
ROAS?
Okay. No, Amazon was not in the 1.
Yeah.
But we've had to scale it up. So now we're at a 4 ROAS when we blend Amazon and direct to consumer daily.
Incredible. Incredible.
So as long as we're at a 4 or above, we're printing cash. If we're below, time to reevaluate.
Yep. No, that's a great threshold. I love seeing our threshold bump up there too. And that's where I think everyone strives to be. And that's definitely a October 1 to December 31st kind of minimum expectation. We hope. We'll see how this goes.
Let's kick it back a few years, because I'd be a moron not to have you on the show and not ask you about the Shark Tank impact, right? Like, you're one of the lucky ones that it got accepted to the show. Walk me through that. What was that like? What has that been like since?
Totally. And it's my favorite thing to talk about because I grew up on the show. I did engineering in college, absolutely hated it. Found out about the show Shark Tank on TV, started watching it weekly. It was like, wow, these people are awesome. They just created an idea and they turned it into something. Then they get funding from this shark and they kind of help them scale to the next level. Like, what a crazy concept. And I got involved with a company called Beatbox Beverages through watching the show. And I was an intern and ambassador and all that stuff for them. So for me to actually go on the show was like a dream come true. But the process is pretty wild. And pre-COVID, they did live auditions. They may be bringing those back, but we basically showed up to Atlanta at the Braves Stadium at 4 a.m. in the morning, stood in line with 500 other people just to be one of the lucky people to pitch to the actual recruiters. So this wasn't to the Sharks. This is just to the people who are going to say, yay or nay, we're going to take you to the next level. So we were one of the first people to show up there. We did a backflip. The backflip helps, kind of being high energy goofballs and a lot of caffeine that morning, got us through the next process. But we auditioned in March of 2018. We did a couple videos to the producers in April through end of summer. And then we got a call in July. Hey guys, we're going to fly you out in September to come film. Just because we fly you out here, one, doesn't mean that you're actually going to film. And two, if you do film, doesn't mean that you're actually going to air. So pretty much at that point, you're like, okay, this is awesome. We're doing it, but it still means nothing at all. So we fly out. Fortunately, we do get the opportunity to pitch. We were told we were going to be at like 10 a.m. in the morning, right before lunch, kind of get them all tipsy before lunch, handing out beers. And then we don't end up going to like 6 or 7 p.m. So everything changes even during that day. Certain pitches take much longer. The other crazy thing is when we got in there, it's filmed in this warehouse. It's where like Sony Studios, where the Avengers is filmed. We're sitting in like the on deck room or the waiting room, which isn't really a room. It's a curtain. Yeah. And we can kind of peek through and see the group before us pitching. And this was this company that had massive sales, like $12 million in sales in their first 2 years. They had a sock brand, I believe. They insulted the Sharks by asking for a significantly high valuation. It was something stupid. It was like $1 million for 0.75% of the company. And all the Sharks were pissed off. We heard them pissed off. They all went out. And so we're next on deck, like boys, these guys are in a terrible mood right now. Like, we have to do anything we can to get them back excited. So fortunately we did. We came in high energy. It sounded like they didn't hold the grudge of the previous pitch with us because they all had new faces on. But get in there. 25 minutes is about how long we were filming for. They chop it down to 7 minutes. They gave us a very positive edit because in those other 18 minutes, I'm sure we said some pretty dumb shit, and we're very fortunate that they didn't put that in and they gave us a really nice edit. But even after that, September ended and then it's just a waiting game. So the season's going by, season 10, we're getting towards the end of the season. We have heard nothing from them. And then March comes around, they're like, hey guys, you have 2 weeks, your episode airs on April 7th, 2019. And we're like, we have no inventory prepared for this. We were not expecting if we were going to not make the season or what. So the episode airs, we do sell out. We're still in Logan, my partner's mom's basement, parents' basement at the time, fulfilling inventory down there. It was all mayhem. That was when the company, which really wasn't a company up until that point, it was just a concept, a class project, a fun kind of idea, hobby, converted to, okay, this is a real business. There's demand, there's awareness, there's something tangible, and we have that validity from the show. So we got into the new warehouse, which we were also very cheap at the time. No one was drawing a salary. The warehouse was even worse than the parents' basement situation because no heat, no AC, there's cigarette smokes from the neighbors coming in. It was quite an adventure. And we were there for about a year until we finally had the means to grow the team, draw a salary, move into a place with heat and AC, which I've never and will never take for granted again. And the continuing to just bootstrap it and build it responsibly.
Dude, I love that. That's such a crazy story, dude. And it, oh God, that's got to be wild. So what about now when the reruns happen? Is it still the same spike or no?
It's never going to be like when ABC threw it up and it went crazy. But CNBC, for whatever reason, and we have a hunch, but our episode is one of the highest rated episodes in the history of the show. We get at least one per month, and that's unheard of. We're in a Shark Tank group with the other 500 people who've been on the show. They see it maybe once or twice a year. We don't think we take full credit for that. Like, our pitch was fun and funny and whatever, but the guys right before us were trying to like break down a door with some like doorstop, and they weren't able to break down like the dummy door. And so I think—
I remember this one. Yep.
I think that also contributed to it. So the episode as a whole performs very well. And so we do see it. We see a really nice spike. It brings in a couple thousand additional people to the site than we were already going to see that day. A couple thousand, 10,000 extra dollars of revenue that we weren't already going to see. Some new leads. That's when it's exciting. Hey, a new retailer saw it for the first time. Big Shark Tank fan. So it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, especially you had people on the other segment that were pretty goofy too. So
that's crazy. And did you have to give up equity for that or no? Even if you didn't make a deal, because the rumor was that back then you had to give up equity.
And I believe that was true through the first couple seasons. And then Mark and a couple of the other sharks were like, we are going to lose quality applicants if we require that ABC takes a chunk of the company. So no equity was needed to be given to the show at all. And so it truly is just free organic traffic that hits once a month, at least once a month.
That's crazy. Are you forecasting that into your P&L? Like, you're expecting the bump?
We don't know when it's going to happen. Some crazy guy found a way to code like the TV guy website to give him a notification whenever an episode was going to re-air. So we opt into that and we find out 48 hours before. So it's not built into the P&L. It's just a nice spike for this kind of upside. So
I love that, dude. So obviously it went from a college class project to being sold in so many retail stores and like a massive brand at this point. And congrats to that. What's the team look like now compared to those early days? Because I'm sure like not everybody in college was the perfect business partner.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the class project and one of the mistakes or lessons that we can draw from this class project idea is that when you're thrown into a group of maybe five people and you have to create operating agreements, you have to disperse equity, you actually have to like create an LLC as part of the class project, you may realize that your partners that you were forced to be assigned with aren't the best people to start a business with. And that's what two of my partners realized. So Logan and Ryan and three other guys were in this original class project. Logan and Ryan are still the only two original members from that class project. I got involved during the time period that the class project was going on, but they had already distributed all equity to everyone. And they had already signed an operating agreement that they found online. And they had already paid for the LLC. So this was like a real business, even though it was truly nothing at the time. It was just a class project. And so I think universities, at least ones that we've gone to and spoken at, have learned not to do that if people think that they're actually going to try to become a business after the class is over. Maybe do fake documents that aren't legit, but the fact that they actually signed paperwork made it quite a problem for when I was joining the team and some other people were joining the team, because we had three people not involved. After the B was graded, the C, moved up to the B was graded, they didn't want any part to do with it. They were just there to kind of be a part of the class. So, but they owned each 20% of the company. So what are you going to do there? It's pretty insane. And so lawyers get involved before you even knew what a lawyer was. I mean, we're like 20 years old. It's like, where are we going to get $1,000 to have a consultation call? So we're lucky to kind of work them out and find solutions there. But if anyone's listening and they're part of a class project, like, just don't sign anything until you get at least a year into the business and find out that you want it to be a real business.
Dude, that's crazy, man. That's so crazy. I can't even imagine that. But that's such a good piece of advice too. Like, and also I've learned the same lesson with like friends, right? There's nothing cooler than building with your friends, but at one point or another, it's probably going to fuck up. It's much better just create friends within the business with smart ass people who are perfect for growing together.
And that's exactly what we've done here. We actually didn't know any of us, like Logan, Ryan, and I did not know each other previous to the class project. And so it's very cool because we're all very similar. We have mutual friends, but didn't truly know each other. Yeah. We do very different things on the weekends. We're all a customer of our brand, but we're not the same person. And that's what's so unique about Kanga is it speaks to a lot of different people. And we kind of live through the brand, but we all do different stuff, right? So we have different hobbies and different interests. And that's something I really like about the culture here. Is Kanga is no one person in the office. It's a combination of 12 bodies in here and then our brand ambassador program of 500 kids and the tens of thousands of customers that have purchased it. That's who Kanga is.
I love that. I mean, that's how you build a lifestyle brand, man. Everybody lives a different life, but there's always going to be one way to incorporate the coolers. And whether it's at the pool, it's at the concerts, it's at the beach, like there's always going to be a use for it. I use it when I'm floating out by the pool, like keeps all my shit cold. And it's like a great part of my weekends. Yep. And we all live different lives. So.
I've seen some of your stuff too recently about like how you guys are expanding into markets where it's hot 365 days a year. And that was like something that like I never thought of. You guys probably always think about that. And that's so natural to you. But I was like, man, that's crazy. There really are places in the world that you guys haven't touched yet that it's never cold and it's always perfect cross net weather. And that's just unreal to me.
Yeah, that's the mission for this year. So I'm excited. Like, so we launched in Australia in October of last year and it was caking, like doing so well. January came, and I guess that's when Australia's like starts to kind of get cold.
Yeah.
Sales just stopped.
Wow.
Like deaded. So I'm excited for October to see if it happens again, but I'm hoping it does. Fingers crossed. But yeah, 365 days of sunshine is definitely the mission.
No doubt.
So dude, last question I got, always the same last question. Biggest lesson, besides obviously the college project LLC signing, What's one thing that you tell the old Austin or the future Austin in building your next company?
I have a lot. They're all different genres, but the one I'd probably speak to now, especially in today's current environment with everything going on in e-commerce and everything going on with the iOS updates, is not to neglect TikTok and the opportunity that organic marketing can do for your business. So what we would consider ourselves early to TikTok, like January 2020, as it wasn't super huge platform yet. We just did stupid shit around the office, skits, whatnot, grew it to a little over 100,000 followers, but never really felt like it was impacting the business, right? Because all that we were posting was entertainment based and just kind of fun, goofy stuff. So we pushed the brakes on it for a couple months. Well, we decided to re-engage it last summer. And instead of just doing the entertainment stuff, which is very important for existing followers, we decided to also do some product educating and talk about the business, talk about entrepreneurship journey, talk about where we were to where we're going. And we had one TikTok go viral in October last year that generated more revenue to our website than our Shark Tank episode did. And so for us, that was like, why did we neglect? Why would we still even consider neglecting it? And it doesn't have to just be TikTok. It can be any social media channel that has organic virality right now, which is LinkedIn, it's Instagram Reels, it's YouTube Shorts. There's a lot of different platforms out there that are going to give you that reach to new eyeballs. And so we've doubled down, and now it's a true strategy that we implement here. Is every week we have an hour to 2 hour meeting where we strategize what we're going to film. Then we have 1 to 2 filming blocks a week where we're going to film 5 to 14 videos. And the goal is to post twice a day, every day moving forward. And we're going to be filming stuff this week that we're posting next week. So we're never playing catch up. We're always getting a week ahead. And so it doesn't happen every time. And a lot of times you're going to invest 4 or 5 hours a week and the whole team's involved and you're going to see no ROI. But when you do have those one or two that do hit virality and get in front of 5 million new eyeballs, that was worth the time invested. And so it can be repurposed on so many different platforms. So my advice is not to neglect TikTok like we did for a handful of months there, and to make sure that you're diversifying your content and your messages that you're doing while on TikTok.
I love that. And I'm going to keep you on selfishly, because literally at 9 o'clock this morning, we were having a conversation about budgeting. What does the TikTok spend look like for organic marketing for the next 5 months? And so candidly, we spend anywhere from $7,500 to $12,000 a month just on small micro influencers to post 30 pieces of content, one a day. Our conversation is like, sure, one of them got on SportsCenter a month ago. We were at Outdoor Retailer.
Actually, I saw that. Unreal.
And amazing, right? Because in theory, that video costs $1,000, but you can't bank on that.
Yep.
So obviously, your time does cost money. Your employees' time costs money. It seems like the content you're recording for TikTok is coming out of your headquarters rather than paying some kid on the internet. But that still costs money. Yep. Are you budgeting it? Are you just saying, hey, we're putting – I'm just using an easy number, right? We're putting $5,000 into TikTok organic no matter what, because we know it's going to rise the tide and hit eventually, and you use that content to run ads on eventually? Or what's your mindset when it comes to budgeting? Because as an operator, that's a question me and Greg got to go have a conversation about tonight. Is like, what are we doing for the rest of the year?
Yeah, it is. You honestly just have to know that you're going to spend X amount of dollars on TikTok. And ours is more on the time than it is the dollar amount, because we use our brand ambassadors a good bit and it's free. We don't have to pay them. We can send them products to do so. We've tried the micro influencer strategy. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it gets a little pricey and above our price range for where we would want to do that. And so we're more so just, hey, let's spend this extra 4 hours a week, knowing that compounded over 3 months, it's going to pay off when you have that one or two moments where it's really going to spike. So we just know that it's a core element of our marketing plan right now is organic TikTok focus. And what's amazing is that, as I was saying earlier, it doesn't just have to go to TikTok. Like, we've had some fail on TikTok dramatically that we spent an hour planning, filming, editing. We throw it on Instagram Reels and 250,000 people see it. And then we throw it on YouTube Shorts, which I didn't even know what that was a couple months ago. I started posting on that, 100,000 views. This is awesome that this one piece of content that maybe we felt like it was a failure on TikTok can go other places. So it's impressive.
I love it, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I'm so excited for the future for y'all. Pick up a Kanga cooler. Available a lot of damn places. So go get it.
Appreciate it, man. This is awesome.
Thanks, bro. Peace. So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.